You listen to Dig Deep on Northern Community Radio. We pair our liberal commentator, Aaron Brown from Minnesota Brown, against Chuck Marone, although there's not really been
some true
fights on this, which I someday there will be.
I walk out of the studio every time, slam the door, and like huff out.
Yeah. Chuck's from Strong Towns.
I keyed his car last time.
he's our conservative commentator.
My car's a piece of junk. You couldn't tell if it was keyed.
Well, and now we want to talk education, but talk about, again, some of the systems, because in the last installment, it was bonding, it was referendums, and these are the systems that these folks have to work under, and teachers specifically also have systems that they have to work under, and there are rules. Let's start there in terms of, like, tenure and some of the things going on statewide right now, and there's a lawsuit, too, we want to get into a little bit.
There are rules. I want to maybe start with a story because I was giving a speech in Alabama to a group. And, you know, I talk about cities and infrastructure and capital improvements when I'm on the road. I don't talk about education policy. And someone from Alabama stood up and asked me, "You are from Minnesota. You guys have great schools. What's your trick? You know, what's the secret?" And so I think it's important to just like step back and realize that we're sitting in a place that values education and values teachers and have made a consensus commitment as communities across the state to support education. And so even though I am going to say some things that are critical of our current system, it's all in the backdrop of the fact that we do a pretty good job today. And how do we continue to make it good and make it better? There's a lawsuit going on right now about teacher tenure. And the argument is that teacher tenure and some of the union rules keep bad teachers in place. And I'll use that term bad teachers, and you can define that however you want. I don't have a good definition for it, but keeps suboptimal teachers in place longer than they should be. And I think it's an interesting lawsuit because when you look at the idea of tenure as it's applied to, say, college professors, which is where the idea originates, tenure is a concept of freeing you up to be able to engage in intellectually challenging and difficult things without the fear of reprisal. So you can, for example, be a biology teacher who talks about evolution, which is a very important aspect of studying biology, and not be subject to being hauled in front of the school board and fired because of the kind of curriculum that you're teaching. How this applies to specifically elementary age teachers, where the breadth of topics that we're discussing is not going to anywhere rub up against something controversial, is really difficult to assess. And there's been parents that for a long time push back on this system of tenure that tends to push out younger teachers more than not when there's cutbacks, tends to protect teachers that maybe have reached a point in their career where they should find another profession. And I think that there's a valid concern there that teachers' unions and school districts tend to turn their back on and almost become very self-protective, I think, at the expense of students.
Aaron, your thoughts on tenure, suboptimal?
Well, let's talk about teaching.
Yeah.
The thing about teaching is that unlike a lot of professions, everybody has had a teacher, probably many teachers. Everybody had a wonderful, a good, an average, a bad, a horrifying experience with different teachers in their life. And there isn't a human being in the state of Minnesota who doesn't have a strong opinion about teachers because of that personal experience. So one of the reasons teacher tenure tends to raise a lot more ire than construction worker tenure or or engineer tenure or any other kind of tenure in any kind of negotiated contract job is because of whatever opinion you bring to the notion of teaching and the people who do it for a living. So when I look at this teacher tenure issue, we have to kind of try to figure out where the anecdotes are based on everyone's personal experience. And I tell you, watching politics, watching the committee hearings in the state legislature and the different legislators of different ages, different backgrounds, different political ideologies, they come into these hearings making decisions about whether to change the law on whether teacher tenure is something they should negotiate or something not. You watch their comments, and these grown-up humans, many of them return to the roles they probably played in high school or even elementary school, some of them, where it's like, well, I had a teacher one time and she was mean to me, you know, and therefore she's a bad teacher who should have been laid off for the younger teacher who was cool. Because I know when I was a kid, a lot of the young teachers were being laid off, just as Chuck describes in the we discussed in the earlier segment about how in the 1980s and 90s, budget cuts created a lot of layoffs. And it almost exclusively hit the young teachers who looked more like us, maybe even younger than our parents, you know, that were perhaps a little more down with the cool stuff that we were into. Our hip happening kids, and we watched them go away, and the lady who would talk about math, she's still there talking about math and making us pay attention. And so we'd say, well, geez, well, that's not, you know, I feel much better in that other teacher's class than I do in this class. And so that's a personal experience. The question is, how do we sort out, as Chuck said, you can't describe a bad teacher because you're talking about a lot of different things. A bad teacher could be one that is commits misconduct of some kind. That's a bad teacher. A bad teacher could be one who is simply not as patient as they should be with children, and or one who is maybe lacks control of their classroom might be a bad teacher. Those are things that are difficult to assess, but can be assessed, should be assessed by administration of any district. And then you got the question of, is it related to results and outcomes? And then the question becomes, the kids in the room and where they started and where they finished in terms of their experience with that teacher. So tenure is there not because everybody thinks tenure is loads of fun and that we like that fixed kind of thing. I'm speaking as I'm a college teacher, and so I'm quote unquote tenured after a period of time. And what that really means for most people, now Chuck mentioned the professors at the university and their need to have academic freedom so they can pursue controversial research and make controversial statements in the classroom without necessarily being fired for it. There's some of that at the level I'm at, but mostly what that means is that there is a very finite system to get rid of me for any reason, whether that's a layoff because there's not a financial justification to keep me around, or because I do something, misconduct, that requires my dismissal. I can be gotten rid of for a variety of reasons. What ends up happening at a lot of these schools, and this is going back down to the high school level, is that the quote-unquote bad teacher is not dealt with by an administration in the way that the tenure system allows. And the other thing is, with all the testing going on as part of our curriculum, do our kids learning? Well, we better test it. That's where we're at. That's the system. And so you can look at the test scores and say that Mrs. Jones and Mrs. Smith both had fifth grade sections, and Mrs. Smith's section did considerably better on the test than Mrs. Jones's section. Therefore, can we conclude that in the battle royale for job security, that we should lay off one and not the other, regardless of how many years they've taught? The problem is that so much depends upon the demographic makeup and the educational preparation and the family situation of the students in question. We don't have any controls for that. We don't know. Every year is different. I talk to teachers in my kids' schools, and we had a great experience with a teacher, and then the next year we talked to her, and she says, I've had just a year from hell, because there are 8 kids with learning disabilities in my room, and the other teachers have maybe 1 or 2. And that just totally changes how you approach your classroom. And so she had a tough year. She worked her butt off, but by any measure, she would have been deemed a failure that year compared to her peers.
I think there's a couple things that Aaron and I can agree on that I think are really fundamental. First of all, one person's bad teacher might be another person's best teacher, mm-hmm. right? Like this is as much of a student-teacher interaction. And I had teachers that I thought were horrible that were other people's favorite teachers and vice versa. So there really is no, I think, easy definition of a good teacher or a bad teacher. I think it's important for us to look at some of the things that are most important about what teachers do. And there have been some really, I think, fascinating studies that have used cameras in the classroom to actually document what makes a teacher very, very successful. And it's often not the things that we look for when we're hiring. Often we look for credentials. Do you have a certain level of education? Do you have a master's degree? But what we find when we actually look in the classroom at teachers that have high performance, and by the way, I was going to say, I think the other thing we can agree on is that test scores are not necessarily indicative of whether you're a good teacher or not. So I think we can agree on that. What we find is that the teacher's ability to connect with students is the most important thing. Are you able to develop in a classroom of 25 kids of different levels of paying attention and being obnoxious? Are you able to make a personal connection with them? And is that able to happen in a way that fosters learning? And what we see is that that's not necessarily a skill that can be taught. It's a skill that you can learn and develop and hone a little bit, but it's almost something that is binary. You either have that ability or not. You're either a connecting kind of person or not a connecting kind of person. So when we prepare teachers, we have this period of student teaching that people go through that sometimes is a value, sometimes is not. But we really don't have any type of evaluation process where we can look and say, okay, can this person control a classroom? Can this person make a connection with students? As part of that connection, do they impart knowledge and help their students grow in many different dimensions? And we don't really evaluate that at all. And I think that is what's missing from our conversation. It's not a matter of good teachers and bad teachers, that there's some binary way to measure that in a testing or an assessment. It's really, are the people that we're putting in the classrooms able to connect with kids and help them learn? And we really don't have an assessment process. And when I think it becomes obvious that it's not working, we don't really have a process to make that change. And tenure is part of that. The union system's part of that. I've got some ideas of how we deal with that that might fit into a union system. But in the system we have today, it's really, really difficult to make those changes.
Every teacher's contract that includes the word tenure or its equivalent has what they call a probationary period. It varies depending on the contract. Mine was 3 years. That's pretty typical. Sometimes they're shorter. They're rarely longer. And in that period, you can be dismissed for a lot less of a reason than after. You don't have to be renewed. And it's up to the administration of a school district or a college or whatever educational place is doing this to assess teachers really on exactly what Chuck's talking about. Now, what they don't have is, I would agree, is a universal system for doing so. Typically, you're thrown in to your classroom based on your credentials and your student teaching. You've observed some teachers working, and then in that period of time, you've got to develop your own teaching style and hope that it is going to become an enduring style that you can develop through your career. Often teachers will realize themselves that they're not suited for this profession, but not always. Not always. And so that's where the administration is supposed to come in and say, we have these expectations and here's some criticism or some feedback on your teaching style that we'd like you to try to incorporate with enough time for them to try to do so. That rarely happens. And so if you're talking about a teacher who shouldn't be teaching, well, that gets difficult. And of course, anytime you've been doing something for 30 years, you run the risk of some people maybe should move on. I don't know that there's a teacher who would say they have never heard of someone that describes. But on the other hand, I work with people who are in the dimmest twilight of their career who still show up early and bust their butts and are listed as among the favorite instructors at the college. And certainly I've known some of my kids have had a couple teachers in their last year of teaching. And you could just say, wow, that person really went out guns a-blazing, doing the best they could. So are there examples? Yeah, but what I don't see is a really obvious system that's fair to the teacher that would replace it, short of administration taking more of their role, what they should take, in evaluating their teachers.
Let me give you that system, because I've thought a lot about this. I think that teaching is unique as a profession in that you start on day one in a classroom, and it is very possible to go through an entire 40-year plus career in that same classroom doing the same exact thing you did on day one. It's a rare profession that that is the case. It's a rare profession that you don't have some type of ladder that you climb up to the next step, where you have to have a personal evaluation of, is this the right career for me? Is this the right place I should be in? In teaching, you start, they have lanes and steps in terms of salary increases. If you're there a certain amount of time, you get a salary increase. If you reach certain benchmarks, you get another salary increase. Your compensation is very much tied to your time in the job. And what this creates is an incentive to stick with the job. Sometimes even after you've reached a point where maybe teaching is not your passion anymore, or not the thing that you're kind of called to do, which, by the way, happens to people. I mean, lots of people switch careers and switch jobs. They find, you know, after a certain period of time, and there's nothing like wrong or defective with people that have that experience. What we don't want to do, and I'm taking educators, you know, at their word when they say, you know, we have the greatest impact on children that anyone is going to have in their child life. A great teacher moves kids ahead in an incredible way. And one who's only there in body and not in spirit doesn't have that effect. So how do we create a system where I think teachers can self-select? And to me, I look at our profession, the profession as one teacher, one classroom, as being part of the problem. I think we need to start thinking of teachers working in teams. And yes, you can have teachers working in classrooms with kids, but I think we need to define the teaching profession as an entry-level position, which would be very much correcting papers, doing, you know, listening to kids read, doing very like hands-on type of stuff. And then have a ladder in a sense where you would go up in responsibility. I am now working with a team of teachers. I'm now teaching larger classrooms. I'm now setting curriculum. I'm now managing a whole cadre of teachers who are working with kids in different ways. I think if we can reimagine the classroom beyond one teacher with one group of kids for 1 year, and think of it in a more fluid way as a team of teachers trying to optimize their interaction with these kids, I think we can create, in a sense, entry-level teacher, level two, level three, level four, where you would have large salary increases and have a top teacher that's making $150,000, $200,000 a year, which is what they should be making because they're great, great teachers. But have that entry level be at a different pace. And then teachers can look and say, okay, I'm at level two. I'm not really progressing here. There isn't a level three opening. I'm really maybe not qualified to be like this next level. Is this a profession I want to be in? And what you would see, I think, is a natural level of attrition creep in. When people felt burned out, when they felt like they couldn't go up the career path, they would move on. And I think that having a level of turnover in the 10, 15% every year is good for any profession, any kind of career path. And we don't have that. We encourage teachers to stick with it for life, whether that is what is best for them, best for the students or not.
I could imagine something like that working in situations. Frankly, for a lot of small schools, that sounds like a little complicated to pull off. But on the other hand, I'll say that a lot of that actually is happening in many ways, even at the elementary level. You know, we're kind of used to the idea of you go to third grade and your third grade teacher is there and they're your person for that year. That's how my third grade was. But on the other hand, we're seeing more specialty, like teachers are specializing in a field at the elementary level. So they'll actually rotate and a certain teacher will handle science, another will handle social studies or math or you know, something that the kids all, I should say, usually reading and math are handled by the homeroom teacher and then everything else is rotated. So there's some of that happening to allow teachers to specialize and maximize their skills in certain areas. I think that's a good thing. And of course, when you get up higher, it specializes even more.
I think tying that, though, to a compensation schedule.
Yeah.
Because what you want is you want the person whose heart is no longer in it. And I'm going to say again, that doesn't mean they're a bad person. Mm-hmm. It just means that maybe their life has changed. You want that person to be able to make their own self-evaluation that, hey, this isn't the career path that I want to be on. And in teaching, there's no career path. There just is a career. And I think that's one of the drawbacks of the profession is that there really aren't points where you contemplate your future and what you're on and the track you're on. It's just, I'm going to hang with it because in 5 years I got retirement coming, or in 10 years I, you know, plan this, or I really like my summers off. There become all these incentives to essentially let inertia govern. And I think we need to modify that system so that our greatest teachers are way more highly compensated than they are today. And everyone else in the system has an opportunity to reflect and go to something that would be better for them. I've stumped you.
No, you haven't stumped me. I'm just trying to think of how much I can cover here.
I want to ask you, Aaron, as a teacher, what does tenure protect you from that if that wasn't there, if the system was different?
Well, I'm governed by rules. And if I violate those rules, I'm out. I can be fired.
Yeah, but if you molest a child, you're out. But what if you just, you know, like, I, my heart's really not in it anymore.
Every year I'm evaluated by my students, and that is part of my evaluation process with my administration. If I was having consistent problems, the administration could get involved. I can be fired for cause. It's just administrations, for their own inertia-based reasons, tend to want to keep things the way they are because it's easier. One of the things I want to point out is that experience does have value, and that's one of the things that tenure often does protect, is the idea that as a teacher becomes more expensive, they become more expendable. And this is actually more applicable
to the high school and
K-12 or E-12 level than it does to community college teaching and all this. What I see, as you advance in the pay scale, like Chuck describes, you go up the steps and you are worth more money. You become, at the K-12 level, something they'd rather go away. And in fact, the contracts at a lot of schools include a lot of pay incentives for education, credential improvements. I have a friend, he's out of teaching right now. He's a great teacher, but life circumstances, his wife's work, he's moved around a lot. And so he's kind of fallen out of teaching. And one of the things when he was looking for work so much that he was trying to do was to keep his entry-level credentials as low as possible so that he would be an attractive, affordable hire. And then what these teachers do when they get in, and like half of the teachers my kids have ever had have been taking up master's level courses while teaching, because now that you're in, you have a financial incentive to do so. I just wish that were not as much affiliated with job protection as it is with every teacher should be well-trained and should be evaluated regularly and have honest discussions about where are you as a teacher today. If you want to talk about reforming education in terms of teacher quality, I'd rather this be phrased around, here's how we're going to interact with teachers to determine where they're at as teachers. Are they burning out? What's causing the burnout? What can we do to get teachers back in the game of being a good teacher? If they were a good teacher and aren't, what's going on there? I know that the perception of the teacher who's kind of leaning against the desk, looking up at the clock, waiting 5 years to retire, is the stereotype that's out there. I'm just saying that while that person might exist, it is not typical of the teachers I work with. And in fact, teachers who have 20, 25 years in the system have a deep toolbox of how to handle different kids in different situations that I have a tremendous amount of respect for. I'm 13 years into a teaching career, and I'm a much, much, much better teacher than I was in the first 3 or 4 years of my teaching career, again, because of experience working with people and different situations.
We want to hear from you. Weigh in on this topic, teachers, tenure, education. Send us an email, comments@kexe.org. We're a little over, but I'm going to ask you guys, you fellows are accomplished individuals, and just quickly, a teacher that really
meant
something. Oh, maybe thank not. You. Stuart Lottie, I had a huge impact on me. He pulled me aside one day and said, what are you taking next year? And I showed him, and I'd signed up for the typical senior year stuff that the counselors at the time encourage you to take, like, you know, shop and home ec and stuff. And he said, you are a smart person. I'm embarrassed that you would sign up for that. Get down there and sign up for my AP history class. And really, I think people like that, you can't say enough about.
Aaron?
I was just somewhere in my wallet. I still carry around a piece of paper that a teacher gave me in high school. And it was my band teacher, Kathy Wiegert, from Cherry. And I just singled her out because I could have listed 10 others. I can't say enough about every teacher I've ever had, including a couple of bad ones. But I had a lot of great ones. But she gave me a little piece of paper, and granted, I played trumpet. I'm no good at trumpet. I'm no good at music. I could have been better had I practiced, but the routine of having music every morning, but the way that she talked about music and kind of made it fit with life, the idea of practice, the idea of having fun and enjoying what you do. And she also was one of the senior teachers in the district who would sometimes be in quasi-administrative capacity, and one time I felt like something didn't go my way that should have gone my way, and she pulled out a day-by-day calendar that had the saying, I've learned that one bad game doesn't make a season, and she wrote a little message on there and gave it to me after this thing had happened, and I carried that around. I've carried that around my whole life since, and it's just one little thing that a teacher did that had a big influence on how I think about things and has just helped me so much.
And just maybe to close out Aaron's thought too, as much as we can debate what should be done in our education system, in Minnesota here, we're so fortunate to have classrooms full of great teachers. And if we're going to call a teacher bad, whatever that is and define, it's a tiny percentage of the people who are doing this job, so...
Our bad teachers are better than your good teachers.
Our bad teachers can kick the butt of your teachers. Exactly.
Dig deep.